And good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host today is Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It is Tuesday, November 24th, 2020. Good afternoon, Dave.
Hey, good afternoon, Melody.
Oh, it's great to be here. Thanks for filling in for Butch today. He decided he was going to do some hunting. So, you know, I left that out of the bag. He's going to say he was working, but no, he isn't. So hope he catches, is the wrong word, but...
he's working on dinner.
He's working on dinner. Hope he gets a big one. So, I don't know what gold and silver was doing today, but they didn't catch the big one. And I'm going to go ahead, and I'm using new screens today, just to see if we can't get final numbers a little bit sooner than later. And we had today, let's go ahead and go to the gold prices. Maybe not. Gold was down $31.90 at $18.05.90. Silver was down 37 cents at 23.25. It's interesting because these numbers dropped and they stayed there pretty much all day long. Platinum was up. This is the interesting one on the day. Platinum was up $33, 3.5% at $965 on a day when palladium was down also. Palladium was down $6.10 at $2,347. So of all these precious metals, I know why we buy gold, why we buy silver, and those of you who have purchased palladium in the past, certainly palladium's price is way too high now. Who knows where it could go or if it's going to go much higher than its record. Platinum really was a sleeper in all this, and it'll be interesting to see if it begins to pull away now. But it's had some good days of late. Let's go here. The USDX today was down 0.34 at 92.17. And the oil prices today, oil was up 183, 4.25% at $44.89. And the paper markets today, you had the Dow up 454 points, actually off the high of the day, but at one point it was over 500, at 30,046. The S&P was up 57 points at 3,635, and the NASDAQ was up 156 at 12,036. So a lot of records are being broken, 30,000 for the first time ever, and you know, I've been saying for a long time, yeah, it's going to reach 30,000. You know, it's going to hit it. I mean, that was the goal. The question is, where does it go from here? You know, we don't know. And, you know, I didn't look at the trades today, Dave, to see the volume on Wall Street to see what kind of a day pushed these numbers up there. But, you know, I mean, naturally, if you have some of this political situation with the presidency beginning to, Biden begins the transition and so forth and whatnot, his appointees, Yellen and so forth. We'll talk about Yellen as a good, pick for the treasurer or not. You're going to have some positive days. The vaccine progress has lifted the confidence, you know, so, and it was interesting also, Dave, this morning I was watching, it was a mainstream media, but they were talking about, the Dow reaching 30,000 and the optimism coming into the end of the year. But what struck me as interesting is the comment is, unfortunately, 2021 will not be as good as it is today. And there were no other comments. There were no other grunts or moans or groans or anyone trying to, you know, talk him out of saying that and so forth. So I thought that was kind of interesting that at least they'll recognize this being a good end of the year, but not so much for the year 2021. So
431 million was the volume on the Dow today. It's pretty active.
That was pretty active. Maybe to get in the last minute trades before tomorrow. It'll be interesting to make the comparison from today to tomorrow to give us a real idea of what the 3 days, how yesterday and today or tomorrow would compare. But you know, we talk into it. It was always Black Friday who, you know, got retailers into the green. And I think when you look at 6 in 10 Americans that are dialing back this year on Thanksgiving plans, they're doing it in various ways, cutting guest lists, canceling travel. Maybe they're scrapping turkey Thanksgiving altogether. And this was the latest installment of the Axios Coronavirus Index. This greater willingness to turn inward and exercise caution around the holidays comes amid signs of increased trust in the CDC and a growing confidence that there will soon be a safe and effective vaccine. We see it in the stock market. That doesn't mean that things are as they seem to be. More than half of Americans, 51%, say they're likely to take a first-generation vaccine. I think it's moving up. Almost two-thirds of respondents say they'd be likely to take a vaccine if pharmaceutical companies deemed it more than 90% effective. An even greater share, 70% overall, said they take it if public officials say it's safe and effective. That's when you don't want to take it, is when those public officials say that it's safe and effective. They allowed, these same public health officials, why do we have an opioid problem? They said it was safe and effective. So, you know, be careful what you hear and where it comes from. So, Dave, it's, everybody's putting all this, but really, we really don't have any long-term understanding of how these vaccines will affect each and every one of those who take the vaccine. And there's no long studies. I mean, sure, you could say 30,000, 40,000 people, but are there any long-term effects? We don't know. Do you, Dave?
I'm just hanging in there like the rest of us, Melody.
But, people need to do what they have to do, but is there anything else from this survey that... that you'd like to share?
I must confess, I'm not sure where you are. We're talking about the Axios Ipsos?
Yes. I said that in the beginning.
Well, I don't think so. I mean, 61% of the people surveyed changed their Thanksgiving plans because of the recent spike in virus cases. We've seen time and time again around pandemic polling, partisan identification plays a role in behavior. More Democrats are likely to say they've modified their holiday plans, 75%, followed by independents at 61%. And Republicans at 49%. Now, just shy of 10% of survey respondents won't observe Thanksgiving at all this year. Now, that's cutting off your turkey wishbone, despite the drumstick, Melody.
Well, 10% could be a lot in the scheme of the economy, the dollars being spent, and so forth. I don't know what that relates to dollars. But
well, the other question too is, what's that percentage in a normal year? You know, is it 10%? Is it 5%? Is it, you know, what is it? I didn't see that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I see what you're saying. I would assume, because the survey was related to the COVID, yeah. Well, I can't imagine that it would be higher. Then we're just really messed up. But anyway.
Mm-hmm. I know, indeed.
You know, we always said nothing would be the same after the beginning of this year, and with all the shutdowns and everything like that. With Thanksgiving scaled down, even canceled by some doctors are quitting their practices. Grocers are beginning to limit purchases again, the quantities. Americans have the sense that the little safety net that we have is beginning to unravel. So things aren't returning to normal. And, I mean, I can't even believe, Dave, they're cutting off, I mean, in going into New York. I mean, what are they going to start doing? Stop searching everybody going into New York? On some of the bridges and so forth?
Gotta get your temperature taken.
I mean, it's ridiculous. Well, yeah. Absolutely ridiculous, and everybody is complying. I mean, to where you can't travel to, I don't know. And it's so bizarre, because the things that they want to institute and they want to, in the name of your protection and your safety, they do other things that are just totally, like, what's the point? There isn't anything much that is making sense of what some of these behaviors are coming from. And it truly is like the old ant pile just stirred up, and everybody's just doing this and doing that. And yet they're not giving any information that is really helpful to the people. They're just giving orders. Do this, don't do that. Well, tell us why. What? Why is this?
Well, we know why, though. I mean, we know. There are far too many people. There's still well over a million people traveling tomorrow, supposedly, with airline reservations. I mean, that's down from 2.5 million last year, but it's still huge, you know, and relative to what the public health officials are saying to control the spread of the virus. And, you know, this New York thing, while it's certainly extreme, and God knows how enforceable it's going to be. Well, it will be if they just block entrances to the bridges and then the tunnels that they're at. But people who've been blowing this off for most, if not all, the pandemic are largely the ones to blame for that. You know, it's just well-minded officials who are trying to do the right thing and prevent the further spread of it, to prevent another series of brutal lockdowns. So, I mean, it really is the proverbial rock or the hard place. And I don't know. I kind of feel that you know, we've largely brought this on ourselves.
Well, again, I don't think we're getting all the true information, so we have to take, but for them to actually block a bridge or a tunnel or whatever, the only way they could do it to enforce it is by military, right? I mean, how can they stop the citizens from going from point A?
There's their own police departments.
You would think with the amount of crime that is being increased in those areas that they'd be busy doing other things. So take them to put them on the bridge to stop people from going in, and, you know, let the rest of the hoodlums, you know, continue to do what they do. I mean, it's, you know, that's what I mean. A lot of these decisions, like some of these restaurants, oh, you can serve drinks in a restaurant until 10 o'clock, but you can't serve alcohol anymore, even if you're sitting at a table, not a bar, but a table. What's the difference between, I mean, just a lot of it doesn't make sense. You got to keep that liquor flowing, so you keep the bars, you keep the liquor stores open, because you know what? A lot of these states, like Pennsylvania, they sell the liquor. They get all those taxes, so can't close those stores. Got to keep them open. I mean, it's just, there's just so many things that, there's so much inconsistency. And there will always be two sides to the story. And again, I think we're left with lack of information of certain things. I saw where the CDC came out. They're all constantly changing their minds and everything and so forth. But anyway, we're not here to debate that. So again, you got these four companies. It's amazing how they all come out at the same time, all trying to do better than the other guy. See who gets the, or how many of them get the billions and billions of dollars that they'll be made. Anyway, it's just, one and one doesn't always equal two. And this is one of those cases where it just, you know, something, you know, is always taken advantage of, Dave. But anyway, let's see, I don't know where we wanted to go. Let's go ahead and talk about student debt. There's a new analysis finds that eliminating student debt repayments wouldn't stimulate the economy. Yeah. A new report published by a nonpartisan committee for a responsible budget indicates that forgiving all student loan debt would cost about $1.5 trillion and increase cash flow by about $90 billion per year, which is a small increase to the economy. Student loan repayments, which have been on pause amid the virus pandemic, are set to resume in January. Democrats have been pushing to nix some student loan debt as a way to provide economic relief. One in six Americans owe money on federal debt, on federal student loan debt, which is the largest amount of non-mortgage debt in the country. Fed Chair Powell has called the student loan debt a major hindrance in people's economic life. Good grief. There are a number of benefits and costs associated with canceling student debt, the report states. But a stimulus measure, it's a bang for the buck. That's what government does. It's far lower than many alternatives under consideration or the relief already enacted. According to the CRB's analysis, eliminating the debt would not equal the federal government spending that amount of money in cash to households across the country. We're going to finish this up when we get back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
We will find you acting on your best behavior. Turn your back on Mother Nature. Everybody wants to rule the world.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cedarstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cedarstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Heading into the break, we were talking about student debt and wanting to forgive a whole bunch of this money. I don't believe any debt should be forgiven just freely. I mean, you made those choices to do it. You should be responsible and pay it back. And particularly since it's taxpayers' money, too, I would think. So, Dave, you know, heading into the break, we were talking about that. And according to the CRB's analysis, eliminating that debt would not equal the federal government sending that amount of money in cash to households. So they want to send that instead to the household. Is that what I'm reading into this?
Well, no. I mean, I think that's the point of the analysis, is that,
okay,
you know, the Committee for Responsible Federal Budget is saying that in forgiving the debt, it's not like a direct stimulus check, say, where, you know, if, you know, the average household isn't going to get $15,000 that is forgiven on your debt. So it's not like you're going to get that to spend all at once. All it's going to do really is relieve them of the monthly interest payment, which frees up about $200 per month for the average student loan borrower. And in other words, the report says that because borrowers often pay back their loans over 10, 15, even on rare occasion 30 years, debt cancellation will increase their available cash by just a fraction of the total loan forgiveness. On the other hand, some might argue, well, $200 extra bucks a month is a lot of walking around money for especially a recent college grad, particularly one who might not have a job. But the report also notes that the debt cancellation would benefit individuals with higher incomes who likely didn't lose their jobs during the pandemic and the economic downturn that went along with it. So the CRB suggests that the debt cancellation would benefit individuals with higher incomes who likely, who didn't lose their job, found that student debt wipeout is not well targeted toward those experiencing income loss, nor is it well targeted more generally toward those with lower incomes. Now, one Democratic proposal would forgive $10,000 in student loan debt. The government would also cover monthly payments for people with private student loans until September of next year. I'm not sure if any of these proposals are going to get traction because of the divided government. We'll have to see what happens in the Georgia Senate elections. But even then, even just among the Democrats, there's some division as whether as a matter of principle, like you suggested, there ought to be any loan forgiveness as opposed to just what's been going on at the temporary forbearance while this economy and people are having issues with cash flow. So remains to be seen, but we'll have a feeling we're going to know soon enough in the new year what this incoming administration is thinking in these terms, Melody.
You know, I mean, I don't think debt cancellation for any debt cancellation for anything is the answer to something. You know, a lot of these students, well, a lot of it is their parents' loans. Would that be correct?
Well, it's certainly a percentage. It used to be, be higher. I don't know that it ever hit 50%, but I believe it was in the upper 30s. I think it's in the 20s now. Although technically speaking, because you have different types of student loans. You have the student loans, which is almost always in the name of the student, the son or daughter. There are parental loans, unsubsidized, that obviously are in the name of the parent, and who knows what personal arrangements have been made within, you know, each of those affected families, if the parents are picking up the tab or if the son or daughter is. It's hard, you know, it'd be hard in any event, I think, to nail that number, to nail a good number down in any event. But, the point's well taken that it's certainly a consideration that ought to be taken into account here in this debate.
Because there's never any collateral ever used. I mean, it wouldn't do the government any good anyway. Right? Nobody loses anything but taxpayers.
Yeah, that's largely correct.
So taxpayers are used to it.
Yeah.
Really. Hey, we'll dish out all these kids' loans, and you know, and the problem is, you know, even if we go into like a forbearance, like they do on homeowners that mortgage that they have, there still comes a time where, you know, the day of reckoning is due. You know.
Well, there is a forbearance that's been going on. That's good. Initially, it's going to go into September, but now it's going to the end of the year. And that's, I think, more of what's being called for immediately is extending that forbearance for the loans. Students, particularly those that are unemployed, don't have to pay back. But they still do owe it at some point. It's just added on to the tab. Just that, the interest that would normally accrue on an unpaid balance is not accruing during this period.
See, that wouldn't be a bad thing to do. Stop the interest. Keep the payments. Keep the balance, but just stop the interest. You know, it would help a little bit. Might help a lot.
So, yeah, particularly if you attended a very expensive private school.
Well, you know, with the Dow reaching 30,000 today, I would expect this to maybe change where the consumer confidence, it fell. So you would think with 30,000, you might see that turn around in December. But for November, consumer confidence fell to a three-month low. And due to a slide in Americans' expectations for the economy and job market, all based on the virus. The Conference Board's index decreased over 5 points to 96.1 in October. That's according to today's report. And a survey economist had called for a measure to slip to 98. I wonder who these economists are that they always survey prior to, you know, any report being released. do you know who they are, Dave? They're always wrong.
Well, you know, they're a... they're typically the same group of people, and they're generally not a large group. I mean, a couple of dozen. I don't know how many are in this this particular survey, But there's typically a couple of dozen. They're the same ones, and they probably get a monthly email saying, "Hey, it's time for your estimate. What do you think? And you know, here, get it to us by this date." And there it is. They take an average or a median, and voila, you got the economist expectation. It's a beautiful thing, although, as you said, it's not all that accurate.
No, it isn't.
I
want to see the names of these people, of these economists. I want to know who they are. But the gauge of expectations dropped.
You're asking for accountability?
Oh, silly me. silly me.
Are you saying that some of these numbers otherwise lack credibility?
I just want to know who they are.
Skeptics among us.
I'm the biggest skeptic there is. Well, you know, the expectations dropped 8.7 points, and that's the most since July, to 89.5 this month, while a measure of sentiment about current conditions eased 0.3 point to 105. You know, now the figures do coincide with the start of the holiday shopping season, and that will help shape estimates of consumer spending for the fourth quarter. And the smallest shares of respondents since March said that they expected better business conditions and more jobs in the next 6 months. And, of course, you know that is all based on the information on, you know, the virus, you know. But heading into 2021, consumers do not foresee the economy nor the labor market gaining strength, according to Lynn Franco. And he's a senior director of economic indicators at the Conference Board, Dave.
Well, economists Andrew Husby and Lee Swinger warn Thanksgiving holiday could drive a significant uptick in infections that prompts even greater stringency, and that negatively impacts labor market conditions. And at the same time, a greater share of people say they plan to buy automobiles, homes, or appliances. Buying plans for previously owned homes were the strongest since March of last year. Also, the share of survey respondents who said they expected their incomes to increase crept up to almost 18%. That's the highest since March. And consumers who said business conditions are currently favorable decreased a little bit from 18.5% to 17.5%. Percentage of consumers who said jobs are hard to come by was essentially unchanged.
Mm. Well, you know, Dave, the seller's housing market, that continues to march on. Home prices surged the most on record in the third quarter, and that's according to the Federal Housing Finance Agency. Of course, the mortgage rates are at a record low, and that is fueling demand for the housing. Prices jumped 3.1% compared to the second quarter. Now, they're taking this gain, the biggest gain in records dating back to 1991. So we've certainly seen the housing market boom during this pandemic with these low rates. And I guess for the need to spread out, you don't want those neighbors anymore. We want a little more distance between us all. And so we've also seen these prices for homes have soared across the U.S. So, and it doesn't seem to matter the uncertainty about the economy. That doesn't seem to have play any part in it. And so mainly the gains have been driven in part by, you know, this low inventory of houses for sales. And again, I would think that, you know, people in the pandemic don't want a lot of people going through their homes that they don't know. So, you know, the inventory would be low.
Yeah. Bring your spray bottle with you.
Yes.
Give an open house a
bad
name. Hazmat
suit and all.
Who the thunk? Well, in a separate report, the S&P CoreLogic Case-Shiller Index. Do you want me to say that again? Good, because
yes.
I'm not going to. But that index of values in 20 of the largest metropolitan areas climbed 6.6% over last year. That beat expectations and was the biggest gain since 2014. Pandemic temporarily froze the real estate market early on, but housing has rebounded to bolster the broader economy. Now, while sales would typically slow down this time of year, demand is remaining strong as buyers look to take advantage of the low rates that Melody mentioned. George Ratiu of Realtor.com says the delayed spring home buying season fueled sales well into October and past the time they'd normally begin to slow down. And heading into winter, he added, demand continues to be strong.
Well, you know, yesterday we talked about Janet Yellen. I mentioned her in the beginning of the program, and she will be the Secretary of the Treasury. She's, you know, it's widely expected she'll be confirmed. She'll be the first woman and the first ever to have held three of the most powerful economic posts in government, including chair of the Fed and the White House Council of Economic Advisors. That doesn't mean that's who we need. What's more, she doesn't come with heavy Wall Street baggage. There's enough of them floating around that, but she also enjoys widespread bipartisan respect, though, which will benefit her in coming negotiations. The Treasury Secretary wields enormous power and policy on regulation, taxes, and the broad economy. She is just, it's hard to believe that she can handle the position. She's so meek, and you know, she certainly doesn't seem to carry the directness. And you know, I mean, her speeches while she was the Fed, I mean, she had it at a fairly easy time when she held the reign at the Federal Reserve, and it was always data dependent. Everything was data dependent. So it's, I don't know.
Is that a bad thing? No. Is data dependency a bad thing? I mean, as opposed to what? Political considerations? I'll take data anytime, any day of the week.
Well, it depends if you're getting the right data. But we talk about on here every day, the data is not correct or not 100%. So I don't know. I mean, hey, we're heading into a break. We'll finish that out when we come back. You're listening to Financial Survival. We'll be right back.
Prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. Just to finish this up about Yellen, you know, we're not going to know how anything comes about. You know, we'll be talking about these people that are being appointed to position, and, you know, it doesn't really matter. You know, there's still the division, there's still the divide, and it's not going to change anything. And, you know, we'll be able to stick with the numbers and see, you know, exactly how the economy is plugging along. And, you know, we do know, what we do know is there's going to be trillions of dollars being printed. There's going to be trillions of dollars that's going to try to get passed for the infrastructure and everything else. And we all know that that's all good for gold. We know it's not good for our country. None of the printing of the trillions of dollars to get us to the point has been good for this country. It hasn't been good for you. Maybe it was good for the elite and so forth, but it wasn't good for the taxpayer, for you and me. And as we go along, we continue to see a lot of our freedoms and our liberties be eroded. And it's a changing world. And, you know, some of us don't like those changes. Some do. And that's what has caused us to be, you know, why we are so divided. And, again, I'm not lecturing anyone. It's just the reality of things. And I don't know how we bridge that gap anymore. But the thing of it is, we have to remember, you know,
I'm getting ready to cry, Dave.
No. Go for it.
No, I'm not. But it's a, I don't know. It's
Well, I'll tell you, from my perspective, I'm looking forward to the, just as an observer of politics and the political economy, and her confirmation hearing will be interesting, I believe. The thing about someone with such a long career is you got a record. And while she doesn't carry the Wall Street baggage that other Treasury secretaries have, including the current one, she does have a lot of what she says that I'm sure will be brought up during her confirmation hearing. I mean, she's one of the knocks is that over her career, it's a long one, she's been less concerned about full employment and more so with long-term debt, particularly more than mainstream economists find ideal right now. And that'll be interesting because you know, on the one hand, I think the Republicans will take her to task for her less weighted concern, shall we say, about on the employment end and the Dems will, interestingly, I believe, take her on this long-term debt concern, because obviously that's going to stand in the way of more spending. Whether for a stimulus relief package or for infrastructure or for whatever else is on the agenda of the incoming administration. But, you know, I think in general, doves are going to worry that she might shift the conversation in Washington in ways that are unhelpful to their agendas. We know that she was notably dovish as Fed chair, reluctant to raise interest rates, at least compared to the academic consensus at the time. She gets credit for that, but since then it's become clear that this consensus was even more wrong than previously thought. She's also repeatedly raised these alarms about America's long-term debt in the past. Well, as do we, as have we, as we will continue. But my point is, in terms of the political component, there's now this emerging economic theory that the dangers of debt are overblown and that government forecasts, which Yellen leans on all the time, have consistently overestimated long-term interest rates and therefore the burden of the federal debt on the economy. These are these modern monetary theorists. Boy, I'll tell you, if there's one thing that's going to come back and haunt this nation, it's $27 trillion in debt. So, again, it's interesting. She said just over the summer, she told Congress, one day in the future after this is all over and the economy's recovered, we'll have to deal with deficits and get them under control. But now is the time when I think it's not necessary to worry about it. I predict that will be one of the things that will be used against her. So we will see. On the other hand, increasing employment generally requires cutting taxes and raising spending. Who in Congress doesn't like that? Mm. That's a conversation most politicians are eager to have.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, Melody. What do you think?
Well, again, I always, I think we're on the road, and I believe there's a day of reckoning, and I'm just not talking, I'm talking about all administrations going back many, 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 many years that have allowed us to get to this point. And, you know, when I talk about a corrupt government, yeah, not everybody's corrupt, but those in power, those who really hold, yeah, they're corrupt. You get people who go there, try to do good and so forth, and they're just, you know, kudos to them. They're trying, but for the most part, we're on the road. And I don't think, I think we all know where the road is leading us. I think we have debt too great to be paid. And, you know, we can talk about, keeping rates low. We can talk about, the infrastructure spending, this and this and that. But the bottom line is it's not healthy for this country. Our economy is not healthy. Our policies are not healthy. And I think it's just a way in order to, you know, if they can kick that can just another mile, they're going to do it. And in the long run, who really suffers? You know, politicians come and go, but what they do and the damage that they do to this nation is really... So anyway, I'm on that path. I stick to the basics. I know what happens if, I'm going to go back to the money. I know what happens when we have a fiat dollar. I know what happens when we have debt too great to be paid. I don't know. What I don't know is the domino. I don't know the black swan event. I don't know when it's going to happen. We know there's going to be some sort of a default reset, however you want to view it. But again, when? We don't know. And we should be thankful we have an extra day or two to prepare and to follow this. And to see where it heads us, and then that way we can, a lot of them are all responsible. Us as citizens are responsible for voting in the yahoos that we have, But the division remains, and it becomes clearer and clearer, and it just depends on which side of the aisle you're sitting on. So, anyway, you have China. We're talking about debt. You know, a string of recent bond defaults by Chinese state-owned companies. That has sent shockwaves. When's the last time you heard anybody talking about this? Doesn't seem to matter anymore. The Chinese state-owned companies, the world's second-largest credit market of $4 trillion, half of which is from state-owned companies. Some bonds have fared much worse than others as investors scramble to avoid the next potential blow-up. Among the most notable losers are notes issued by a coal mining company, an energy group. I'm not going to say their names.
I'm disappointed.
I'm not going to say their names. So I'm just giving you the group's name, an investment holding and health, culture, tourism group. So some of these companies haven't missed their debt payments, and some of them are rated AAA by the Chinese domestic rating firms, but their bonds have tumbled by at least 14% by just November 10th. And that's when a surprise default by a state-owned Chinese coal producer cast fresh doubt on the explicit guarantees that have long underpinned the government-backed borrowers. And most of the onshore bonds hit hardest this time share a common symptom. Their profitability has lagged far behind their debt growth, Dave. So,
ding,
again,
ding.
Mm-hmm. So debt.
Yeah, there you have it. I mean, that's why investors, both Chinese investors and foreign investors in those bonds are worried. I mean, 2 days after the coal default 2 weeks ago, the other coal company that you mentioned, Pingdingshang, Tianan, held a meeting to ease their investors' concerns following this slump in value. I mean, it later wired funds to meet early redemptions on a 500 million yuan bond. That's about $76 million. So that's certainly no chump change. Investors still remain cautious about its liquidity. The company's so-called quick ratio that measures a company's abilities to use its liquid assets to meet short-term debt obligation, that fell to 0.6 from 0.7 just a year ago. Now, a quick ratio of 1 or above is typically considered healthy. These are not. In any event, there are several others there, but all with the same situation. High-risk ratios, falling values, too much debt in general. That could spell bad news for the Chinese economy, because at default, especially a major, more than one, would send ripples through its recovering economy.
Well, you know, Dave, you would think it would create ripples, but nothing seems to create any ripples anywhere. It's just mind-boggling. I mean, it truly is. Again, when that ripple happens, Katie, bar the door. You know, we were talking about people with their forbearance on their homes and everything, and there's millions of Americans that are expected to face eviction by the end of this year. About 5.8 million adults. 5.8 million adults say that they somewhat to very likely to face eviction or foreclosure in the next 2 months. Now, this is according to November 9th Census Bureau Weekly Pulse Survey. That accounts for a third of the 18 million adults in households and that are behind on their rent or mortgage payments. And, I mean, you know, the CARES Act signed into law in March that allowed homeowners to pause mortgage payments for up to a year. So borrowers who signed up for that sort of the program could face foreclosure by March. This is a big, this I think is the biggest deal that's facing us.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of people. So I'm not sure how they get out of this one. How do we avoid this problem, Dave?
Jobs would help.
Yeah, but it's really hard to get caught up once you're behind, especially if you don't already have savings and you've, you know. So if you get a job, you're just starting fresh from that one. What about all that back date? You can't get caught up.
For sure. It's a huge dilemma. The only other thing, I mean, again, we talk about forbearance programs, but you know, that still usually leaves landlords hanging in the lurch. They've got bills, too. You know, besides outright bailouts, I don't know where we go.
Oh. Well, I know where we're going. I know where we're going. We're going away. We're at the end of the program today. I want to thank each and every one of you for joining us today. Thank you, Dave. And we'll be back. Just check in tomorrow. Have a very safe Thanksgiving. God bless.
I wouldn't have to work at all. I'd fool around and have a ball.
Broadcasting to the U.S. and around the world by way of Clear Digital Audio, 22,500 miles above the planet, this is the Global Star Radio Network.